Good evening, folks, and welcome back. Now on this Saturday, the 24th day of April, 2021, I'm your host, Mark Hall. And when it comes to looking back and trying to wrap up a week like this one, there's almost no way to put it in perspective except chronologically, because it just started out obscene and then went, well, even more obscene to the point where absurdity doesn't quite cut it anymore to describe what's happened to formerly free America and indeed the whole stinking world. So let's start off the way the week did. On 419, the 19th of April, the anniversary of the shot heard round the world. Some of you know this is probably one of the most significant dates in history when it comes to the battle for and against tyranny. Certainly, most important, the shot heard round the world was fired on this anniversary, April the 19th, 1775, when a bunch of people at Lexington and Concord Green decided that their version of the senile one, in this case, King George III, wasn't going to be allowed to take their armaments either, and they stood up against him. Imagine that. The result, of course, is once upon a time we lived in a free nation dedicated to certain principles that are now no longer allowed even to be taught in schools. During the World War II era, the final resolution to the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was executed on this date. At least anecdotally, Adolf was famously reported to have said, "This just goes to show you what happens when you let a bunch of Jews get a hold of guns." Years later, your host had the privilege, at least by telephone, to come to know the late Aaron Zellman, founder of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, that has famously said, "They work to prevent anything like that from ever happening again, because, quote, never again." During the Clinton regime, the final solution to a bunch of people in a church, Saturday worship keepers in Waco, Texas, was also executed on this date, April the 19th, 1993. And as my friend, the late investigative researcher Mike McNulty proved beyond any doubt, those who weren't burned alive by the FBI and federal troops were executed by Delta Force and other snipers hiding out back, out of view of the cameras. And, of course, that anniversary was celebrated 2 years later in Oklahoma City, where the patsy, Timothy McVeigh, was not the lone bomber who set off the only bomb that took out the Murrah building, as well as a whole bunch of evidence and a bunch of kids there, too. Obviously, the day has pagan significance as well. It's certainly a day when people need to be paying attention and watching. And ultimately, folks, this is why I suggest that 419, April the 19th, is one of those days where, for both good and for ill, big things tend to happen. They generally have to do with tyranny, and they push the scales one way or another. So from that intro that looks back over the years, we'll now look back over the weekend, which certainly set up events later on in the week, where we can see that the nutcases were out in force, but in the case of Mad Maxine Waters, it goes far beyond merely being a blithering idiot nutcase, and yes, folks, a genuine racist who uses that term to demonize others, but even by her standards, she's off the rails now. Why, do you remember back on January 6th when President Donald Trump said that protesters, quote, have got to stay on the street and get more active, more confrontational? They've got to know that we mean business, unquote. In other words, as the press and the leftists in the Congress said, he was inciting the American people to riot. Why, it was an insurrection. Wait a minute. No, that wasn't President Trump. He said they needed to remain peaceful and seek redress of their grievances in the constitutional fashion. The one who was really pushing people to riot, and they did, was Maxine Waters, who flew to Minnesota over the weekend and sought not only to intimidate a jury that, amazingly, wasn't sequestered so they got to hear the threat, but she came right out and did far more than the president was ever even accused of, even though they did impeach him.
What should protesters do?
Well, we got to stay on the street, and we've got to get more active, we've got to get more confrontational, we've got to make sure that they know that we mean business.
And why don't you loot some Target stores and kill some people and maybe burn some things up while you're at it? Even those unhinged enough to be her followers got that message and acted on it. Remember, folks, they'd already been committing mayhem, looting, and arson, so how do you get more from there? I guess murder is about it. Because just hours after Mad Maxine told Black Lives Matter extremists that they needed to be more confrontational, they were. And there was a drive-by shooting in North Minneapolis where local media reported that the Minnesota National Guard and a local Minneapolis police officers providing neighborhood security in the north part of the city were fired upon, two suffered minor injuries, by shots from a white SUV. And like Mad Maxine, they were also breaking curfew. And asked about that, she said, well, curfews don't apply to her, and quote, I don't know what curfew means. I don't think she knows what most words mean, especially things like shall not be infringed or an oath that she took to a constitution. She doesn't have a clue as to what that means. But more importantly, folks, this goes way beyond mere hypocrisy. She wasn't merely doing what she accused the president of doing, only for real. She was clearly attempting to influence and, yeah, even intimidate a jury by suggesting that if they didn't come up with the right verdict and any murder charge that was even on the docket wasn't sufficient, there ought to be increased violence. Some of the jurors have already suggested they know that by being on the jury, their personal safety is already at risk. And she just expanded the threat.
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that is say guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't, we cannot go away.
And not just manslaughter, right? I mean...
Oh, no, not manslaughter. No, no, no. This is guilty for murder. I don't know whether it's in the first degree, but as far as I'm concerned, it's first degree murder.
Congresswoman, what happens if we do not get what you just told? What should the people do?
Oh, a quick insert here. The jury did, of course, get the message. How could they not? One of the alternates actually said afterwards, quote, I did not want to go through rioting and destruction again, and I was concerned about people coming to my house if they were not happy with the verdict, unquote. So it's obvious why they caved. But back to Mad Maxine.
What should protesters do?
Well, we got to stay on the street, and we've got to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure that they know that we mean business.
Oh, nobody who's paying any attention has any doubt on that score about what you've got planned. There was talk, and that turned out to be all it was, about censuring or even expelling the scumbag from the House. Who are we kidding? She's their poster commie. Oh, and would it surprise you in the least to know that she still has kept all of her socialist media accounts, in spite of clear threats and attempts to incite violence? Twitter, thy name is hypocrisy as well. By the next day, there were people talking about a mistrial, because obviously Mad Maxine had in fact threatened the jury. She did everything but a horse's head in the bed. Although, come to think of it, there was an officer that testified that found a decapitated pig's head and animal blood at his former residence. Renowned leftist attorney Alan Dershowitz even weighed in on the controversy, suggesting he believed there was pretty much a mistrial guarantee after all of that, when he said,
well, first of all, the judge should have granted the motion for a mistrial based on the efforts of Congresswoman Waters to influence the jury. Her message was clearly intended to get to the jury. If you acquit, or if you find the charge less than murder, we will burn down your buildings. We will burn down your businesses. We will attack you. We will do what happened to the witness, blood on their door. This was an attempt to intimidate the jury.
It's a technique, he went on to say, that's been borrowed precisely from the Ku Klux Klan in the 1930s and 40s. And you got to admit, folks, look how many of them are already wearing masks. And I'll add this, too, because he certainly implied it, but didn't come right out and say it. The Maxine Waters of the world are also basically saying, we don't intend to just intimidate juries. You white folks nationwide had better realize we're coming to burn down your houses and your churches. And they certainly already initiated the church takeovers, both in communist California and Canada. And Maxine Waters in particular, along with the Biden Fuhrer, have made no secret of what they intend next. Which takes us to where? Oh yeah, what they called a verdict. Some of us have another way to put it. Yes, folks, the news is out. The jury is back in, and the choo-choo train was rolling down the tracks. Officer Derek Chauvin guilty on all counts of death by lethal injection of George Floyd, although he didn't do the injection. But we all know a railroad job when we see it and hear it, and the jury knew that they had better give the right verdict or else. So as pre-programmed, First count, second-degree murder, guilty. Second count, third-degree murder, guilty. And third count, second-degree manslaughter, guilty. Add them all up, looks like the minimum sentence is 25 years or so, but not to worry, he's a cop. Given the publicity, he'll probably be dead in a week. And just like Jeffrey Epstein, he probably won't kill himself either. In fairness, though, there's some question on the verdict, not when it comes to a reasonable doubt. There's plenty of that. But whether the jury really knew what was going on, whether they were scared out of their wits, or whether they'd just been watching too much TV. Because as many people have pointed out, he was convicted in the media long before there was even a hint of a trial. And I'd be willing to wager, folks, that 90% of Americans don't have a clue what actually killed George Floyd, i.e., George Floyd, heart failure, and a whole bunch of drugs, including fentanyl. Which brings us to the biggest follow-up question today. No, not that there'll be riots. That's a lead pipe cinch. And we're already seeing reports that news about riots is being suppressed. No surprise there either. So it may be a while before we actually see the extent of the carnage or what other provocations will be required now to make sure that it develops fully as planned. Now, the biggest question, as the NC Renegade points out, is why cops aren't already quitting in droves. The moral of the story seems to be, do your job, and if you're not stabbed in the back, you'll get a show trial and a public execution. Well, wait a second. I guess there is an obvious exception. You can be part of Biden's new SS and do you-know-what against you-already-know-who with total impunity. Which brings me next to a bit of compare and contrast right off the top today. Most of this comes courtesy of J.D. Hayes at Natural News, but it's certainly things that your host has talked about before as well, particularly when it comes to the death of the rule of law and any pretense of a fair trial in America with a K. Unless, obviously, you're part of the deep state, in which case you don't have to worry about a trial at all. Case in point, Hillary Clinton. We all know that you can commit various acts up to and including murder and treason and get away with it, especially if you've got the FBI's help in bleach-bidding disk drives and then hammering them into non-existence. And by the way, if your daddy's able to steal an election, you don't even have to directly be part of the deep state, and you certainly don't have to worry about getting rid of the evidence. The FBI will hide it for a while, and then the media will ignore it for you. As Hayes notes, Hitler never faced a single charge, in spite of more crimes than Carter had pills. Maybe we'd better update that nowadays and say George Floyd. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's first national security advisor, General Michael Flynn, was directly targeted by the Obama justice regime, the FBI, kind of as a proxy for Trump's entire campaign. And nobody was arrested, much less tried, for the use of illegally obtained FISA warrants and all kinds of similar, we used to call them violations of the Constitution and rule of law. More recently, the Department of Justice, and we all know it, and they don't even care if you know it, opted not to press charges against a different kind of police officer in the Capitol Police who executed Ashley Babbitt in cold blood. Turns out the DOJ didn't even try to claim it was self-defense. In fact, they said it wasn't, and he wasn't protecting anybody else as well, but hey, you're not even allowed to know who that guy is, much less see a show trial. Why? Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Certainly Ashley Babbitt was white, which makes it a non-event. Also, it was really murder. And how do we know that? Because the press didn't convict whoever the guy was a long time ago. When it comes to a court of what now passes for law, you know you're never going to see the evidence anyway. And so while some of us, with access to the alternative press, have certainly seen the execution video, from multiple angles even, all we know for sure is that absolutely no warning was given. It was a one-shot kill, and that guy's getting away with it. Too bad even the jurors in Chauvin's trial don't have that degree of anonymity. And before we move on, one last note on the Chauvin choo-choo. Just about every attorney in the country, from Turley and Dershowitz to ambulance chasers you never heard of that probably work for three-letter news agencies, is now suggesting that it's almost certain that there should, at least, be a successful appeal for dozens of reasons, from jury tampering and Mad Maxine to the $27 million settlement given to the family by the city before the trial, the fact that the jury wasn't sequestered, the obvious tainting and trial by media well in advance, and so on and so forth. But still, I again have to ask the obvious question. What makes anybody think that any follow-up appeal will be any less of a railroad job than we've already seen? And isn't it a lot easier to pre-select and then coerce if necessary, a few crooked judges, plenty to pick from, especially in America with a K, than to intimidate even a dozen people? But maybe in post-constitutional America, it's no longer even necessary to go through the charade of intimidating a so-called judge. You just find a blithering idiot. And maybe a good place to start is in the Congress, particularly when it comes to the speaker for the criminally idiotic Nutcase Nancy. And you've got to hear this to believe it. She actually thanks George Floyd for sacrificing his life for justice. Why, gee, no wonder they want to get rid of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. But I guess they hate that sacrifice on the cross even more, come to think of it.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice. For being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe. But because of you, and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice.
Oh, and let's not forget lots of Nikes and big screen TVs, too.
Your name will always be synonymous with justice. And now we have to make sure justice prevails in the sentencing. But that's, you know, that's its own procedure.
We'll bring out the guillotines after that. And even among absolutely brainless comments from the speaker for the communists, that may be among the most idiotic of all time.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice. Your name will always be synonymous with justice.
Kind of like the name Joe Biden will always be synonymous with integrity. Or is it intellectual prowess? After that, I do think it's important to have a bit of brilliant counterpoint. This comes from an articulate young woman named Candace Owens. Without question, one of the best. And here's what she had to say after the slam dunk, talking to Tucker Carlson.
And what we're really seeing is mob justice, and that's really what happened with this entire trial. This was not a trial about George Floyd or Derek Chauvin. This was a trial about whether the media was powerful enough to create a simulation and decide upon a narrative absent any facts. Whether it was powerful enough to repeat showing and talking about a 9-minute clip that came from somebody's cell phone without adding any context, without showing the full, you know, the full police video, which they could have released. They refused to release the full body cam, which would have added more clarity to the fact that the media was lying.
Which is a great summary, but she was just getting rolling.
You know, the media came out, let's not forget this, Tucker, the media came out and told us that this was a man who was just getting his life together. He was a good, you know, good member of society, and he got mixed up because a racist white police officer had it out for him and killed him. All of that fell apart. All of the facts came out, and all of that fell apart. We now know, of course, that he had enough fentanyl in him. It was three times the lethal dosage. Three times lethal dosage in him when he died. But nobody cares, because the media was successful in putting out a narrative, and they kept hitting that narrative. And the reason why the Democrats are happy is because they realize, of course, the media supports them, and now means the Democrats can get whatever they want, because they can create a narrative, and then they can treat people like pawns and get them to basically say, if we don't get what we want, we will riots, we will loot, we will send these people out like soldiers to destroy your neighborhoods. And that is exactly what has happened. That has been the determination of this trial. The media and the Democrats now have enough power to bully and to lie to and to create propaganda and to successfully win. And that is what happened. And they are celebrating that win today.
And that, of course, is on top of overthrowing a legitimate government and stealing an election and then proving that they can do it whenever they want from here on out, because nobody's going to stop them. And now that the government media complex has been so successful, she said, they'll press their advantage.
And it is working with the education institutions, teaching critical race theory and all of this nonsense to make sure that we are mass producing failures that are angry and that are violent and that are willing to riot and loot on behalf of the Democrats, because that's all they want right now are pawns in their nefarious scheme to take over this country.
And we'll see, I guess, how that army of ignorance gets deployed from this point on. Which brings me then to this. I actually saw this video, too, linked on the Gateway Pundit, from Ami Horowitz, concerning tensions surrounding the show trial. I was actually going to just use a quote or two, but the whole thing is so good, and it's not very long anyway, I decided to run it all.
I'm Ami Horowitz, I'm back in Minneapolis, and the tensions are high. The city is about to explode. I'm here to find out what the hell is going on.
You can burn the whole city down. What does it matter?
So I say burn the city down, you know, so they can see that we're here.
Do you think the city's going to burn down?
Yes, absolutely.
No question about it?
No. And that'll be the least of our problems.
By burning all the city down, will it teach them a lesson?
I think, honestly, say I'm all for burning it down. There shouldn't even be a trial. He should be convicted just as is.
Even got off, would you support street justice on him?
Yes.
Y'all should have fed him to the wolves a long time ago.
How many unarmed black people were killed by cops last year? You know, idea?
100 plus? In just Minnesota?
No, around the country.
Oh, thousands.
Unarmed black people.
Thousands.
Now, at this point, as some of you regular listeners may be aware, the graphic on the screen gives the actual number. It was 18.
No, around the country.
Oh, thousands.
Unarmed black people.
Thousands.
Seems like they're trying to erase, destruct the whole race of, you know, the African-American race.
Would you consider this a genocide? It's the eradication of an entire people.
That's a good question, and now that I've been confronted with it, I'm going to go ahead and say it.
I mean, genocide means, like, the targeting of one race for its destruction. Do you think that's what they're doing?
Genocide of anybody that's not white.
Would you call what's happening a genocide?
Yeah, I think that's one word for it.
Genocide?
Yes, most definitely.
A genocide?
Yeah.
We need another civil war in this country in order for us to have true justice.
If that's what it takes, then we have to do it.
Do we need another civil war now?
If that's what it takes, then I believe so. If that's what it's going to take to revamp everything, for everything to be equal, at least equal, for us to have justice, I believe so.
Will it happen? Probably.
What percent of this country are white supremacists?
Say most of the country. I can't give you a number, but
we'll say majority of the country.
Yeah.
Should we just gather up the white supremacists and do street justice?
That would be ideal. Again, I'm not going to say anything that would directly incriminate me, but I would say that would be a good idea.
I don't want to say we need to go start killing all white folks, but it's like,
but
maybe they need to feel the pain in the heart.
Well, that's probably one thing that there's no doubt about. There's a whole lot of pain coming. And as is also undeniable, it's by design. It's not just civil war, of course, that's on the radar. There are a number of indications that the attempt to start World War III with Russia, Russia, Russia is right on schedule, too. The escalations continue, first with the U.S. regime sending troops not to the United States border to defend us, but to the Ukraine border to defend who knows what. Maybe it's Burisma. Yesterday, the UK Sun reported that Russia fired cruise missiles in the Black Sea and moved dozens of fighter jets to the border. The same source is also reporting on what they called a stark warning from the U.S. Strategic Command on Monday, saying the United States must prepare for nuclear war because current conflicts could and are evidently intended to escalate, quote, very rapidly. The agency spoke to Congress on Tuesday morning, where they also warned the U.S. is currently facing not one but two nuclear-capable strategic peer adversaries at the same time when it comes to Russia and, of course, the Biden puppet masters in communist China. The posture statement preview said, quote, the spectrum of conflict today is neither linear nor predictable. We must account for the possibility, I would say probability, given the idiocy in Washington, of conflict leading to conditions which could very rapidly drive an adversary to consider nuclear use as their least bad option, unquote. And finally, Vladimir Putin's getting a lot of press for his version of the state of the Russian Union. He warned foreign rivals, said the Daily Mail headline, not to cross the red line, and accused the West of, quote, picking on Russia. I think that's a kind of a diplomatic understatement, don't you? In his annual speech, while 120,000 of his troops, and that's more than the 40,000 or so that NATO, mostly U.S. troops, have already put on the borders as well, prepped for war. Said the story, Putin addressed lawmakers amid the heightened tensions, both at home and abroad, and slammed the West for, quote, picking on Russia for no reason, and warned any country, and I think he probably means the especially senile one at the top of that list, against crossing his red lines, as he gave his annual State of the Union address on Wednesday. The 68-year-old president told lawmakers that Moscow will always respond to provocation amid escalating military action on the border with Ukraine, where he continues to amass thousands of troops, saying, quote, I hope that no one will think of crossing a red line with Russia, and we will decide ourselves where it will be. He did at least say that Russia's response will be symmetrical, although fast and tough. The organizers of any provocations threatening our core security interests will regret their actions more than they've regretted anything in a long time. Well, unless maybe we're talking about the theft of an election. Let's go to break on this note from no longer Great Britain, where their Ministry of Transport, or what now passes for it, has announced that they're going to have the mark of the beast. They call it vaccine passports for now anyway, in place by next month. So that properly pre-poisoned passengers can bypass the quarantines and at least some of the other travel restrictions. In honor of an earlier subject of the crown who warned about this kind of thing, at least he didn't come right out and call it the mark of the beast. Anyway, I do think the Ministry of Transport should advertise this by saying, get your ticket to board the Orwell Express. What's that? I think I hear another choo-choo coming, and we'll be right back.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt enough. I can read the writing. I'm a patriot. Color me red, white, and blue. Fellow patriots, America's counting on you. And I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Call. And let's pick up our recap in the news towards the latter part of the week now, where the theme of deception continued. But to say that it went well beyond absurdity really doesn't quite do it justice. In the book 1984, George Orwell called it the Ministry of Truth. I guess we're just working up to nothing but communism. You know what? I can remember back when they just stuck to putting model rocket engines under pickup trucks so they could blow them up on command and call it photojournalism. This has gone way beyond that, though. Now they're editing stuff out that they don't want you to see, writes Christina Layla for the Gateway Pundit, summarizing the latest Orwellian nightmare from America's criminal fourth estate. NBC News, sick, deceptively edited police body cam footage so that their viewers, those who haven't yet figured out that they're being lied to, wouldn't see the knife in the hand of 15-year-old Makia Bryant moments before a Columbus officer trying to protect another young girl from death shot her dead instead. Also, she observes, NBC deceptively edited the 911 call to omit the part where the caller says that a girl was, quote, trying to stab us. Furthermore, NBC anchor, the disreputable Lester Holt, began the segment by showing a picture of a smiling Makia Bryant to try to make her look somewhat innocent. Evidently, not showing her with a knife poised to stab helps on that score. This is beyond willful deception, folks. It's outright criminal. And, of course, the police body cam footage, notes Layla, released by the Columbus mayor, showed Makia Bryant attempting to stab someone as the officer had to act swiftly and open fire, fatally striking her and saving the other girl's life. By the way, no less than two different neighbors in the area have come forward and said that had the officer not acted, there would have been at least one, maybe additional fatalities after that. One of the neighbors, a military veteran named Donovan Brinson, gave footage to police from his own security camera showing exactly what he was talking about. The incident, he said, was, quote, violent and all just happened so fast, and had it not been for the actions of the cop who shot her, more people could have died. One more thing here, folks. After watching both of the videos, I'll say this about the police officer. He was an excellent shot. Turns out he was a marksman in the military as well. And for once, says Newsbusters coverage of the story, both ABC and CBS were actually honest and did show the part where Makia Bryant was trying to stab another female. I guess the moral of the story here, folks, for the Ministry of Truth is, this is what conspiracy is about. Guys, come on, who are we kidding? You still know how to get together and criminally conspire in order to hide the right stuff and push the official narrative now, don't you? And here you have people that still wonder how criminals in Congress can get away with incitement to riot. But I guess, folks, when it comes to outright in-your-face deception, it's certainly tough to beat a communist takeover, election theft, and then the continued attempt to destroy what's left of the American economy. We turn next to the Daily Mail for this headline, quote, "The science is undeniable," which means, of course, it's a bald-faced lie. The Biden Fuhrer, Ut Kamala Harris, have now promised to slash U.S. carbon emissions in half. And that means destroy what's left of the economy by, well, get this, 2030. In a virtual climate summit, where a virtual Biden Fuhrer appeared on virtual video with Putin, Xi Jinping, and 38 other so-called world leaders. From sellouts like the UK's Bojo and France's socialist Macron to communist Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. As I looked at the photos in the article, a smiling visage of people like Xi Jinping, Biden's puppet master, I couldn't help but think, you know what? Vladimir Putin is far and away the closest thing to a leader of the free world on the entire list. And that speaks volumes. The Biden Fuhrer, for his part, appeared wooden. Well, maybe we can't say that anymore. He appeared virtual. Maybe silicon is a better way to put it. Still, though, the nobody home sign was clearly up. He says he talks to the experts. Well, maybe he looks up and see who's got a hold of the strings. And then he said this about a more equitable future, which means exactly what communists do to you once they've taken your guns.
The signs are unmistakable. The science is undeniable.
Whoa, whoa, time out. I said it before. When you hear crap like that, folks, you know that he's lying. And it's not just his lips moving. This is to real science as the cheap hooker is to real love, with sincere apologies to that far older profession. And I considered playing a bit more of this, and for the most part, I don't want to subject you to it. But I couldn't help but note a couple of glitches as I listened to it more than once. And it went even beyond the lousy lip sync and the vacant, black, lifeless eyes.
I see the engineers and the construction workers building new carbon capture and green hydrogen plants to forge cleaner steel and cement and produce clean power.
And no, I didn't edit that, and it looks like the White House didn't do a very good job of it in real time either. But I guess the point goes beyond bogus science and crappy engineering. If they can't even handle a virtual conference and not make it look second rate, why would anybody trust them to run your life, much less take your cars and your guns, destroy your future, while they have their hand on the nuclear button? Still, though, comrades, the Bolshevik buzzwords just percolated right on through. Listen carefully to this snippet.
I see an opportunity to create millions of good-paying, middle-class union jobs.
I.e., no union, no job for you.
I see line workers laying thousands of miles of transmission lines for a clean, modern, resilient grid.
Powered by what? Not clean-burning coal or natural gas. He's getting rid of those, if you keep on listening. And Texas saw firsthand what bogus science will get you.
I see workers capping hundreds of thousands of abandoned oil and gas wells that need to be cleaned up, and abandoned coal mines that need to be reclaimed, putting a stop to the methane leaks and protecting the health of our communities.
Like they protected your health with bogus lockdowns. Like they protected your businesses with bogus lockdowns. And your health with idiotic mask mandates. There's some undeniable science for you. It's undeniable because you're muzzled. Scientists and doctors who disagree lose their jobs. And they'll knock you off of Twitter and to Facebook if you even try to dissent. And with protection like this, folks, I guess the easy answer is just take the poke and die.
I see auto workers building the next generation of electric vehicles.
While others destroy your soon-to-be verboten autonomous internal combustion engine vehicles.
And electricians installing nationwide for 500,000 charging stations along our highways. I see the engineers and the construction workers building new carbon capture and green hydrogen plants to forge cleaner steel and cement. And produce clean power. I see farmers deploying cutting-edge tools to make soil of our heartland the next frontier in carbon innovation.
You hear that, Bill? Yeah, see, I'm listening. And we'll make sure nobody grows anything organic there either, much less tries to sell it.
By maintaining those investments and putting these people to work, the United States sets out on the road to cut greenhouse gases in half by the end of this decade. That's where we're headed as a nation.
Politically correct leftist sources claim that the U.S. carbon emissions in 2020 were cut by 12% year over year. So basically what the Biden Fuhrer is talking about is saying, if you thought the 2020 crackdowns were bad, we're just going to keep it up forever. And then we'll get to our goal, which is obviously to destroy the economy of a once great nation. Oh, and everything else that goes along with it. But if you believe that destroying the U.S. economy in the name of bogus, non-existent, man-made global warming, a.k.a. climate change, is science, you'd probably be willing to believe that George Floyd is a national hero, the savior, who, you know, sacrificed himself for justice, or at least a good, even better than heroin high, for a bit. And you'd probably feel right at home in the People's Republic of Minneapolis this week. Unless you're white, of course, in which case you'd better be very careful and tread very lightly because, you know, tolerance abounds and it might even kill you. This story, too, comes from what might not quite be a safe enough distance, although it is across the pond again at the Daily Mail. Sign at George Floyd Square, says the headline, tells white people there you better decenter yourself and, quote, contribute to the energy of this sacred space rather than drain it, unquote, or maybe they'll find a Makayla Bryant to drain you. Yeah, there really is something in Minneapolis today called George Floyd Square, and white people visiting there, the piece begins, are being given a separate set of instructions to decenter yourself and contribute to the energy of this space. Oh, and do not take photos of others without consent, you little piglet, you. The instructions were posted on a placard near the South Barricade, a makeshift checkpoint set up at the intersection of Chicago Avenue and 39th Street, manned by volunteers, wonder what color they are, to block traffic at the entrance to the square. A block away, George Floyd Square is a makeshift memorial set up by what are called community residents, that is, if they're the right color, I guess, at the intersection. Residents so shut down traffic leading to and from the square, prompting complaints from local residences and businesses that the area is not accessible to police, and there has been, I hope you're sitting down, an uptick in crime reported in the area, not counting, of course, the open bigotry, because city officials and police have vowed to reopen George Floyd Square, where there's been one fatal shooting and a police chase of a suspect in an unrelated crime. The city's leadership and police have disputed claims, though, that it's a no-go zone for so-called law enforcement. The placard, and they've got a great big picture, and I'm going to read a bit of it just to show you how tolerant the non-racist racists there really are, says, welcome, well, some of you anyway, to George Floyd Square. Underneath that, it says, a sacred space for community, public grief, and protest. And I got to pause here, folks, and admit this. I never thought I would actually be seeing or much less reading something like this on this show. It makes me feel filthy, bigoted, just to even say or read what these nasty, evil bigots that are telling you they're oh so anti-fascist and oh so anti-bigot, and if you don't like that, they'll kill you, really are. This is even beyond George Orwell's worst nightmare when it comes to doublespeak. Underneath that bit of hypocrisy masquerading as newspeak tolerance is the following, describing where the sainted George Floyd, quote, took his last breath under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer under the watch of three other officers. Enter with reverence, humility, and openness as an invited guest. I bet if you're a really welcome invited guest, they'll give you a hit of fentanyl or at least some kind of an appropriate drug to memorialize the sainted one with. But it continues, und says this. Care for each other by wearing your mask and asking others, or maybe demanding that they wear their mask. Honor the space, it says, as a place to connect and grieve as caring humans. That is, if you're the right color. If you're not, listen to this. Underneath that, it says, for white people in particular. Now, wait a second, folks. Can you imagine if there was a sign that said something like that addressed to black people or any other non-politically correct person of color race? Yeah, it would rightfully be called what it is, blatant, in-your-face, undeniable racism. Maybe they've got special water fountains for white people there in George Floyd Square, too. Can you see how just absolutely over the top this is? People that are sitting still for this, folks, deserve what they're absolutely positively going to get. And if they doubt that, they can go back and read history. Start by looking up places like Bergen-Belsen, Dachau, and, of course, Auschwitz. Okay, here's what it says, though. For white people in particular, decenter yourself and come to listen, you white slime of privilege, you. Learn, mourn, und witness. Remember, you are here to support, not to be supported. Be mindful, says the second bullet point, and I use that terminology because it fits, doesn't it, of whether your volume, pace, and movements are supporting or undermining your efforts to decenter yourself. What do you bet, folks, within a month the media is going to make that the new politically correct term of not-so-thinly-masked bigotry? Bullet point number three, seek to contribute to the energy of the space. Maybe you should channel a little satanic force while you're there, rather than drain it. Bring your own processing to other white folks so that you will not harm BIPOC. Oh, and if you don't read the New York Times and other politically correct sources of real information, you might not know that BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. In other words, just about everybody but you, Whitey. Okay, I'm almost through with this one. I'm going to read the last of the bullet points. After noting first, though, that the Daily Mail includes a couple of interesting tweets about the signs in George Floyd Square, where's the instructions, ask one, to refrain from committing felonies, resisting arrest, and maybe even following commands from law enforcement officers. Yeah, he does say, signs like this seem to perpetuate division. And obviously, folks, that's the intent. All right, back to the actual bullet points. If you witness white folks doing problematic things, well, like what, you mean? Demonstrating their whiteness, their privilege, or just showing their white faces? Well, whatever that means, speak up with compassion to take the burden off of, you know, good folks, black folks, and our siblings of color whenever appropriate. Seek to engage rather than escalate so that it can be a learning moment rather than a disruption. Dare I say it? Or else? Why do I suspect that the Nazis told the good Germans that if they saw a known Juden out without the yellow star, they should speak up with compassion too, at least one time, so that it could be a learning moment for this Jew? I can't help but think that there were probably a lot of signs just like this scattered around Berlin in Germany in the late 1930s. And if you can't see it, folks, more's the pity. Let me be as clear as I possibly can as I wrap up this story. History is screaming out a warning. So does Scripture, of course, but that's now even less welcome in the public cesspools. How do we follow that up? Well, the Communist Congress has passed a bill over Republican objections and over the Constitution, too, by the way, if they'd ever bothered to read it, attempting to make the District of Criminals into the 51st state. For those that wonder what I'm talking about, find a copy of the Constitution, pull it out, and read Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17, and ponder the implications. One of which clearly is that a communist posing as a representative named Mondaire Jones will call you a racist. With all of that on the table today, I think it's important now to connect a few dots, and I've got several stories to help do that. We'll start with just a couple of comments from two different sources. One is from the Organic Prepper blog and a piece by Fabian Omar describing what he refers to as third worldization and the slow-burning SHTF, and I suspect you know what that stands for, of America, which of course needs a K in it nowadays. The question really isn't just how all of this third worldization is going to play out, because we can see it at this point, but it boils down to this, and he only hit some of the high points. The standard of living is dropping significantly everywhere. There's certainly an obvious increase in criminality, homelessness, an unchecked level of immigration, or even invasion. There's a decline in private services and products as manufacturers and companies across the board have to cut costs to try to stay afloat and keep what limited profits they have. The situation in so-called public services, which don't make a profit, from infrastructure to sanitation, is obviously even worse. And all of this leads to something else that's already obvious. We're going to see increasing levels of inflation, even hyperinflation, along with deflation in certain areas, horrible levels of increased taxation, and outright confiscations, which is what government does when it can't tax or inflate enough to cover up for their crimes. On that score, Swiss analyst Egon von Gertz weighs in, noting that the paper silver price today is only half of what it reached during January 1980, in spite of the fact we've seen incredible and unreported inflation since then. Why? Because it has nothing to do with supply and demand. In a real market, he says, the price of silver would be substantially higher. But in a fake market, it's easy for the suppressors to simply sell virtually unlimited amounts of fake paper silver. In fact, every single physical ounce of investment silver is now estimated to be oversold with between 500 and 1,000 ounces of paper claims. Especially when it comes to London and their LBMA, or the Crimex, COMEX, things your host calls the crooked casinos. Von Gertz goes on to say that he's warned people against buying into silver ETFs or various funds of any kind because the risks are multiple. It's a paper security held within the financial system and thus has multiple counterparty risks. Furthermore, the gold and silver holdings are not segregated from the custodian's assets, which means they own no gold or silver directly. It's stored within the banking system. It's probably, and who knows how many times it's been sold or rehypothecated. It's certainly not fully insured. And investors basically will find, if they ever actually try to lay hands on it, that they don't have any actual access to their physical gold or silver. He goes on to talk about problems at the Perth Mint again, where numerous investors holding paper or synthetic silver at the Australian Mint are reporting delays of up to 4 months when they ask for delivery. But the real issue, as he and others have pointed out, is what he calls hyperstag-in-deflation. And if that sounds a bit chaotic, I guess it should. Yes, we should know that hyperinflation is a monetary event. It arises as a result of a major increase in money supply. Think printing and sending checks to everybody, including tons of illegal aliens, for example. Not to mention simply printing debt without limit. And it leads to total debasement of the currency. The Austrian School of Economics refers to the final event in this inevitable sequence as the crack-up boom, when the average Joe Blow on the street finally wakes up to the fact that the money in his wallet or his bank account is never, ever going to be worth again any time in the future as much as it is right this second. So what does that mean? Yeah, spend it while you can. Hyperinflation, though, will occur mostly in commodities. Things like food, oil, hard assets, especially gold and silver. Oh, and let's not forget, lately, things like steel and lumber. But, says von Gertz, hyperinflation isn't the only inflation we'll experience. We're also going to see stagflation and deflation. Bubble assets like stocks, bonds, and property can deflate, at least in real terms, being measured in a constant purchasing power of gold or silver. There'll also be stagflation, which means economic stagnation combined with this type of hyperinflation, as the cost of living, and things like food prices especially, will rise dramatically, while at the same time many people lose their jobs. Pensions and Social Security payments will not in any way be able to keep up with the inflation, and people will sadly end up being destitute. His solution is one that he's talked about many times, and we have here as well, things that have been real money for about 6,000 years, especially gold and silver. Von Gertz believes the paper gold correction ended before the end of March, just under $1,700 per fiat ounce. He thinks the risks in the stock market, on the other hand, are massive and a crash could happen at any time, and suggests that what's coming is the biggest bull market in the history of real gold and real silver. And as the first article I mentioned from Fabian Omar in the Organic Prepper blog notes, it's important to try to mitigate against the coming financial collapse and hyperinflation combined with deflation in certain assets. Which leads me finally to these observations from Brandon Smith, also a libertarian and kind of Austrian-oriented, at alt-market.us, who notes that globalists are fixing for because they'll need another crisis in America as their reset agenda seems to be failing. When it comes to medical tyranny and the coming poke, we're actually seeing resistance in a number of European nations at this point against forced vaccinations and the vaccine passport, although it's unlikely they'll have the ability to repel a full march into totalitarianism. Meanwhile, most of the rest of the world, especially Asia, India, and Australia, are already well under control, which leaves formerly free America, especially flyover country, where he says conservative Americans in particular have long been a thorn in the side of the globalists. And it really comes down to a simple matter of mutual exclusion. You cannot have an openly globalist society and conservative ideals, like a Bill of Rights, at the same time in the same place. It's impossible. Because conservatives, he said, believe in limited government, true free markets, individual liberty, the value of life, freedom of speech, private property rights, the right to self-defense, the right to self-determination, freedom of religion, and the non-aggression principle. In other words, we won't harm you unless you first try to harm us. But none of these ideals can exist in a globalist world because globalism is, at its core, the pursuit of fully centralized tyranny. And he continues, they seem to be particularly obsessed with deconstructing and sabotaging America in the pursuit of their global reset. And it's hard to deny that, folks, given just what we've heard today alone. Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum is fond of reminding people that the COVID pandemic is the perfect opportunity, with plans that people like the Biden Fuhrer are implementing whole hog to destroy the world economy and push their global reset. Trouble is, they're not doing enough damage or terrifying enough people yet. Which means what? Well, obviously, the jig is up. The globalists are going to need another crisis if they hope to enforce further lockdowns in the United States and achieve their carbon cutoff, as well as medical passports and disarmament of the peons. So, says Brandon Smith, don't be surprised if there is more engineered chaos going into the summer months. We're already seeing it, folks. In spite of the fact that they've shown they can shut down the entire judicial system and have their way with anybody they want, they're still inciting to riots. And now there's the nonstop narrative of the booga, booga, booga COVID mutation hype, which is really convenient since they're in fact incubating COVID mutations with all of the pokes that they're pushing in hundreds of millions of guinea pigs all over the world. What a great way to develop not only variants on the bioweapon, but race-specific ones to boot. And they're obviously trying to push World War III, probably with Russia, over the Ukraine. At the same time, they're destroying the U.S. military while Biden's CCP puppet masters laugh. In other words, expect to see everything from war to mass shootings to super spreaders as they continue to throw crisis after crisis at us in order to wear people down and force all of us to accept totalitarianism. How long, he asks, until Americans finally wake up, realize they need to take matters into their own hands, and that gives the Biden regime exactly the excuse they're looking for to institute martial law measures in various places. Yes, we need to be prepared, and now, and on just about every front you can imagine. But more importantly, folks, don't be fooled. Don't be suckered into doing the wrong thing for all the wrong reasons, whether it's being disarmed or allowing yourself to be used as a guinea pig. Which, come to think of it, amounts to pretty much the same thing, except in both of those cases, we've already seen the results. So I guess, ultimately, it's more like suicide.